Blog Talk Radio.
My foot's all pain, got me drinking. My foot's all pain, got me drinking. Give me beer or whiskey, wine or gin. Anything to shake this foot I'm in. My foot's all pain, got me drinking.
Hey, welcome back to the Shades of Blue Soccer Show. This is Thad Bell from thebluetestament.com. On the line, I should have a couple people. Steve Brizendine from MLS Soccer, are you there?
I am here.
And Mike Kuhn from downthebyline.com. You there, Mike?
I am here.
Well, welcome, guys. It's been a while since we had all three of us on, for dang sure.
Yeah, that was like last year sometime, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's definitely been a while. Try to get these a little more regular now for people who are listening, at least a little more frequent. hey, well, big news in the sporting world is the signing of the Portuguese center back Nuno André Coelho. I'm pretty sure I just butchered his name, at least part of it. Mike, what do you know about this guy?
I mean, I don't know a ton. I mean, he's basically, I guess, what you would call a typical Kansas City signing, in that he's not a guy that the majority of us have heard of up to this point. Just like Julio Cesar, Raylene Collin, Christian Namath, even to an extent. So, I mean, it's a guy that we don't know a lot of. We just have kind of bind on the net about him. Portuguese center back has played, play might be a bit of a stretch at times, but played for some of the biggest clubs in Portugal, and most recently played in Turkey, and that almost is the extent.
How about you, Steve? What do you think of this guy?
Oh, I saw this on Twitter the other day. I think that before I get to that, I mean, he's played in European competition. That's a good thing. And like Mike said, this is one of those things where I think the front office at Sporting look for good players in less than ideal situations. I was also thinking of Sony Mustafar, another guy who was in that situation, and even to some extent Rudy Rosell, even though he was in Barcelona's system, he was with Barca B, and not really getting any top flight play. So, but back to what I was thinking the other day is the thing that jumps out about me is this guy is 6'4". I mean, that if he's got any ups at all, it's going to make him a pretty formidable force in the air. The question now then is, where does he play? When does he play? Because if Iko Parra can come back, we've seen what kind of a beast he can be aerially and on defense as well. Matt Beisler is still Matt Beisler, very solid, very, very positionally oriented. So is this a center back triad with Coelho looking to move in if Beisler is with the national team at the Copa Centenario? It'll be interesting to see how he pans out. But I think the height alone is going to make this guy somebody that other teams are going to have to take notice of.
Do you get the feeling that Brad Davis and Justin Mapp and Graham Zusi and Benny Failhaber all started salivating when they realized how tall this guy was?
Well, you think about, obviously they don't play Yankee Stadium this year when they have NYCFC, but Beisler and those throw-ins, and then the set-piece service from the other guys, that's going to be – I think he'll be a target if he's out there on the pitch.
Mike, how about you how many options we have back there Sporting has, with Beisler, Coelho, with Opara, with Ellis, with Olam? I'm probably forgetting somebody, but a lot of variety possible back there.
No, I mean, we've gone from – it's amazing how just one signing makes us go from, oh, my God, we need a center back, we're really thin there this year, to, hey, we're actually pretty deep at center back now. with just the one position we now have, or the one addition we now have, five guys available to play center back, and that's not even counting Olam when you have Beasler, Opara, Cuello, Ellis, and EPB. You have five guys who can play the center back position for Kansas City. So it's a nice problem to have. Obviously, there are still some concerns with having five. I mean, you have Opara, who's had one healthy season in his entire MLS career, more or less, in 6 years. And Cuello himself hasn't played since November of 2014. So, I mean, he's been off for – he'll be off for almost 16 months by the time Sporting plays their first real game in March. So there are still some questions, even with the amount of depth that we now have at center back.
Has anybody identified what his injury was that kept him from playing, or was it just that he wasn't in somebody's favor, you know?
Well, what I read was his last game, he came on as a substitute and was subbed out about 10 minutes later, and another site I looked at made it look like it was a ligament injury. So ACL, MCL, one of the big ligaments in the knee.
From watching the highlights that I've seen so far, there's quite long ones out there actually of him. He looked like he had some speed and could handle the ball, and was, you know, he knew when to step in and make the tackle. You know, highlight reels are highlight reels. You know, they can always make almost anybody look good. But it looks like he had quite a bit of capability there. I mean, Steve, how do you think he fits in with, you know, the way we have Beasler or Opara, if he fits in with those guys?
It's well, I think he may be a guy that they look at for at the outset as an Open Cup guy, as a CCL guy, as a guy who steps in for Beasler in the summer if he's again with the national team. And we've seen Peter Vermees in the past use an extra center back in a close game, especially starting with Houston a couple times, where he'd bring on Opara back when Arena and Colin was still with Sporting. They would have three center backs out there in a tight game. So you could see him as that guy coming on late, like Eric Palmer Brown did a little bit last year. But in terms of jumping right in and making a splash, I don't know, coming back from an injury that sat you for a year, I don't know when we'll first see him. Maybe it'll be early in the year. Maybe it'll be more when Open Cup opens up. So it's kind of hard to tell how they will use him in the back line right now.
No, so supposedly they're still waiting on, you know, P1 visas and all the right approvals, if I understood that correctly. But he is currently in Arizona, probably on a visitor visa or something like that. But he is currently in Arizona, so he's training with them, at least from what it sounded like.
Yeah, if he gets some time in with them, get some familiarity, maybe he comes up to speed faster. A lot of it, you know, you come back from a ligament injury. They say a lot of guys come back stronger from an injury like that. So maybe he's ready to go. Maybe he's good out the gate. It'll be something that really, I think, training camp will sort out. It'll be interesting to watch the exhibition games in Tucson this year and to see how he plays and where he plays and then what he does while he's out there.
So overall, guys, I'm asking this to both of you, but one at a time, obviously. Is this the signing that kind of makes us feel like we're set now? What do you think, Mike?
I do feel better than I did before the signing. Obviously, I mean, I don't know if I'm 100% feeling great, but I mean, I feel everything we've done this off season has addressed needs that I think everybody has seen in the club, and this is just another one of those needs that we absolutely had to address this off season. So in that regard, I'm pleased with the move. I'm I, at the same time, I'm a little apprehensive simply based off of the history, but I mean, Vermes has shown in the past that he can get guys to come in and play. So I'm willing to give Vermes the benefit of the doubt at this point.
Yeah, he's not perfect. I mean, there have been some misses, but it, for the most part, most of them have come in and performed fairly well. Steve, what do you think?
I think it is. They were looking for a center back, of course, pretty much as soon as Ike went down last year and just never got a deal done during the regular season and summer transfer window. So I think obviously they've been scouring for quite some time. It does plug the last real hole in the lineup, unless you want to look up front and say that they could use another striker. But you've got a pretty good scorers tandem in Dwyer and Nimmet. Now, granted, Nimmet is going to be gone during the Euros, so might have liked to see him pick up another scorer type guy. But you know, if as long as Dwyer is on his touch with finishing, and you know they got some people, other people can play up front. It'd be interesting to see how quickly Daniel Chaloué comes along. I think the if there is one gap left, it might be up front in terms of depth. But beyond that, I think they really have addressed all the issues. One of the things we haven't talked about much is bringing in another keeper, because of what that lets them do, I think, is get Kempen minutes with Swope Rangers. If I'm predicting, that's what I'm predicting, is that Kempen gets minutes with Swope Rangers, and that this new guy is going to back up Tim Ilya with Kempen ready to go if something happens, to step in as the number one ahead of this new kid who came in. But I really do think they've addressed any concerns that they had about depth pretty much all over the pitch. Yeah.
Yeah. Last year, you know, with the max roster of 28, I think most of the year, I think we carried 25. Is that right, Mike?
25. Most of the year it was 20. Well, 25 after Ike went down, but technically 26.
Okay. And then with all the various injuries, I mean, there was even one game where I think they dressed 17, if I remember correctly. I think there's a couple games where they might have had 18 on the bench, but the 18th player wasn't ever going to step on the field. At this point right now, we're at the max. We're over the max. And as Steve alluded to, or not alluded, but talked about it a minute ago, about maybe sending Kempen down. I mean, it's most likely they'll send at least one keeper down to Swope Park Rangers. But they're going to have to at least get rid of a couple people at this point, whether it's cutting, whether it's sending them down. And there's some funny roster rules about that, so I'm not sure. I think you can only send one down that will not take count against the roster, but I'm not totally sure about that yet. And then tonight, Heinemann mentions possibly this another midfielder that out there that they were looking to get on loan might have turned into acquiring. Lots of opportunities there to move players still. What do you foresee out there, Mike?
In terms of making space on the roster for the new additions, I agree with what you and Steve have said. I think Kempen is going to go play with the Rangers, but he with the team in town, I think he's definitely going to be the number two keeper. So if Melia goes down, Kempen's going to get recalled and be the one that starts the next game. Khan is just there to in case Melia goes down in a game, as he did in Portland, I think. As for who could go down for the entire season and open up a roster spot on the senior roster, I think you got to look at someone like Connor Hallisey or Eric Palmer Brown. I mean, Hallisey is we just have so many more numbers now in midfield with on the wing in midfield with the likes of Knapp and Davis. Even Anor being healthy this year and De Jong being able to play up there, I think Hallisey is just kind of the odd man out at this point and really just needs to get games. So I think he would be a prime candidate to send to Swope Park for the entire season. Palmer Brown, graduated high school now, needs to get minutes. And again, with the Rangers in town, Vermes can be there to help facilitate his transition in the professional game still, which I think was another reason why he was held off from going out on loan to our USL affiliates. Vermes, from everything I've ever seen of him, it likes to be very involved with his players. And I think that was one of the main reasons why we never really used the affiliates to the full potential we could have. As for the rest of the roster spots, I mean, I think you got to look at two guys I already mentioned in Anor and DeJong as being odd men out on the roster. I mean, Anor was injured for a very good portion of last season, didn't get a whole lot of time, didn't look overly great when he did. And then you got DeJong, who can play both sides on the both forward and back on the wing. But with the re-signing of Sinovic and the emergence of Dia last year, you gotta think that Kansas City's not going to carry three left backs this year.
The one thing about DeJong, is that. I think if they're looking to move him, which I don't know if they will or not, they might wait to see it until they see exactly how Rodgers come back from that foot injury, because then you do have another guy who can play an overlapping role on the left side from the mid spot, who's got that left foot and can do some things down that flank, albeit not on the front line, not on the back line. I think he could make that transition. I think maybe if you're looking to move a guy out earlier, maybe it is on your, because he has been out of the conversation for quite some time, like you said. But I think they might take a look at Roger, make sure he's back at full speed and good to go before they decide whether or not to pull the trigger on any move that they might make with DeJong.
When in Vermeer's press conference the other day, he made it very clear that there's definitely going to be some more movement, not just in, but possibly out. At least I got that impression that, you know, he still looked at maybe somebody going out, and I don't know if that's a trade or
another
player.
I don't think that was
an
impression. I think he said that there would be people going out because of the roster, because they can't trade. Really, realistically, they can't trade because you're getting rid of one guy, you're bringing in another guy, unless you're trading draft picks or trading for cash, which they've done before. But I don't think they're going to make a player-for-player move in terms of bringing anybody in this year. I think it's going to be offloading from now on, unless it's that deal that Rob was talking about. But everything else, I think, is going to be offloading.
Yeah, when I say sent out, it might be two guys for one or a guy for cash, like you said, or draft picks or whatever is needed at that point. Stack up a few and get a couple extra first-round draft picks next year or something, you know. Whatever he ends up doing, we'll definitely see – it sounds like we'll definitely see at least one player leave, not just go to Swope Park, but leave the whole club in entirety. At least, again, that's the impression I got from what he said.
Well, Mike, if you're on the same page, Dad and I were talking about this because we're at the news conference today, but targeted allocation money seems to be a pretty prominent thing – piece of this club's plan to retain the core of their players. So, Mike, is that your kind of take too? That if a guy goes out, it may be for that TAM that they like so much to keep the veteran players played.
I think you do. I mean, we had last year we had Espinoza being paid down, or at least per the player union salary numbers, we had Espinoza paid down with general allocation money. I think you could look to get him onto TAM money this year. I think you also could look at Failhaber or Dwyer with potential raises. Also Namath, who was who at least in Hungary has been speculated to be unhappy with his wages with the team. So I mean, we have a number of players that would be considered core players that you could certainly spend probably all of our TAM and general allocation money on this offseason to keep that core intact.
Yeah, and I think it's more so even than TAM is the general allocation money, because there's so much you can do with it and there's less restrictions on that at this point. The TAM,
yeah,
you're very
more
restricted in how you can use it.
Which I think teams are more likely to get rid of TAM than they are general allocation money, which is why I was thinking about targeted, which Sporting, given the way that they structure their roster, I think that they can make better use of target allocation money than a lot of clubs can.
Yeah, that may be. I'm not totally sure. Because of like because of the restriction we're talking about, it's got to go. If you're signing a DP, you've got to pay down one. It's got to be of more money than the DP that you're paying down, and it's got to be used within certain time ranges. There's just a lot of aspects to it, and you know, I don't know who. You know, we'd have to make Nemo or Dwyer or Benny a DP at that point, and say pay down Zusi. Or things like that. It's not that it's not doable. It's just that those are things you have to do in order to use it. You know, bringing in another player.
Nemet would qualify as a DP, I think. Now he's a senior international, played competitively for his country in international tournaments. I think you'd make a pretty solid case for him as a DP, even though he's played his way back in while he was at Sporting. I think I don't see that you would have too many hurdles to declare him a DP and get him paid off with that money, and then, you know, again, like you said, pay Graham down or somebody like that.
Well, I think there's a case for making several players DPs, or at least paid as DPs, and Nemo, Dwyer, Failhaber, who else knows who might be coming in. Don't know what Davis's contract is looking like now. There's a lot of different options there for who needs to be paid or could be paid.
Yeah, I think the general approach seems to be, let's not pay a couple, three guys a whole bunch of money and let everybody else kind of go hang. It's let's try to make this as equitable as possible so we can keep experienced players around as long as we can. Now, Colin was a cap casualty. They weren't going to get to keep him. But by and large, they've been pretty good at retaining their core guys using these pretty targeted financial strategies.
Now, we talked about like the depth at defense and at center back and left back and such forth a minute ago, but I'm changing gears on you a little bit there. Sorry, guys. But the overall roster right now, I think that's probably as much depth at every position there is in competition, legitimate competition. I mean, you know, the coaches always talk about wanting competition at every position and things like that, but there's pretty much legitimate competition at everywhere right now, except maybe D-mid, as far as who could start or who would be demanding some playing time at some point. I mean, Mike, do you feel that way at this point?
No, I absolutely think there's competition in basically every position on the field. I mean, we just got done talking about the center backs. I touched on the left backs. We touched on the wingers, and then Dwyer. But you have Namath that can push Dwyer if Vermes decides to push him centrally. You have a midfield that was so crowded that we didn't retain Lopez. We let him go for nothing, basically. There's competition all over the field at this point, including in goal, where Kempen, I think, showed last year that given the chance, he'd be absolutely fine as the starting goalkeeper for the club at this point, I think. So, yeah, absolutely, we have the depth all over the field now.
Yeah. Well, what about D-mid, though? I mean, who do you see being the competition for Sony's spot right now at true D-mid?
I mean, that if you had to put one position that isn't, I mean, that might be the weakest. You have Sunni, and then you have Olam and Failhaber, I guess, because, I mean, Nagamura, Espinoza, Kintia, those guys really aren't D-mids. Those are those are more guys that can advance a little bit more. So really, you're limited to Mustafar, Olam, and then pushing Failhaber back. And honestly, with the addition of Davis and his play last year for Houston, pushing more centrally than he did on the wing, I feel less shaky about putting Failhaber back in the D mid position again, giving that another try and having him play the deep line playmaker role, because I think one of the issues last year was the fact that when Failhaber played back there, we had no creativity further up the field. But with the addition of Davis and Davis being able to slot in at more of an attacking midfield position, you give that creativity back to the attacking third that would allow Failhaber to also create from a deep line position.
So how scary would it be having Failhaber as a D mid, being able to play that pass up to the wing, up to the attacking mid, up to the center forward, attacking mid of Davis, being able to lay that ball pretty much anywhere around the field that he wanted to? How scary would that be for some opponents?
No, it would be quite scary for a few teams, because I mean you have the ability to thread passes through from deep as well as further up the field, and then what happens in a lot of those situations is you see team foul, but then you have Davis and Failhaber stepping up over the ball to take the free kicks with a 6-3 Opara or a 6-4 Cuello to get on the end of them. So, I mean, it certainly makes Kansas City a much more dangerous team all over the field in that aspect.
I think it's scary for the team until you lose possession and give up a counter. And then you don't have the guy like Mustafar who's got one speed which is in the red line and as your possession destroyer and the guy who busts up the counter. I mean, you got a lot of creative guys up there. And granted, Failhaber has done a lot of work on defense. I say this, and I'm trying to get back in his good graces because he's mad at me today. But he's done a lot of work on defense. But Mustafar does give you that speed up to 11, possession wrecker, that can sort of offset the counter. Because right now, yeah, you've got all these creators, but if something goes off with a pass, then you've got guys sprung, and you don't have somebody back in the back whose job is pretty much to wreck those possessions before they get to the back line.
Well, and this may actually be circling back to our initial discussion about Cuello. Looking at his highlights, how many times did you see him come out of nowhere to do that saving slide tackle and knock the ball away if you watched any of those highlights? I mean, he kind of looked like a much more finessed Colin in that he was making those saving tackles, but it didn't look like he was creating the problem that caused the guy to have the breakaway in the first place, like Colin did sometimes. Maybe he's that guy that can still do that from the center back spot. Maybe he's, you know, almost a D-mid center back kind of guy who can do that same sort of thing that, you know, most of our can when you have those situations, like you might be playing Benny in there.
Does put pressure on Beasler if that's the case, though, because, you know, if you miss, obviously I haven't seen this guy in action yet against MLS competition, he might just be cleaning up the forwards on the break, up the middle of the pitch. But if you miss, then you've got a mismatch. And that's and Beasler's he again, very positional, and he's made a lot of clearances and saves, but he's not the guy who's going to jet out of nowhere to get to the open spot if somebody blows a tackle. The thing that, again, we don't know how he's going to line up. Would they line up with maybe an extra center back and no D mid, or Cuello in that sort of almost like a sweeper spot? for lack of a better word, ahead of the back line. But it's one of the things that with this club, with the way Sporting plays the game, the D-mid spot is crucial. Because that's when they've had success, is when they've had a guy in that spot who is good at doing, at causing the team problems. With Julio Cesar, he wasn't a burner, but he knew where to be at the right moment to break stuff up. Uri was an interception machine and a good distributor. Mustafar just has the work rate to really harass opposing forwards. So that D-mid spot is, to me, has always kind of been the crucial spot for Sporting in any season that they've had any success. So I don't know if you've got a guy in there who's shown that he can do the job in Mustafar, then yeah, you want somebody to push him, but I don't think you really want to tinker with that spot and move too many people in and out.
Fair enough. Looking at the strength of this roster now, I mean, we keep talking about the roster at this point and how deep it is. But one of the things that I keep finding fascinating is that in every conversation I have with you know, guys like Steve and Mike and anybody else who is fairly knowledgeable about the team, is we look at, well, Davis could play on the left, he could play in the attacking mid. Mapp could play on the left, he could play on the right. Zeus could play out on the wing, he could play in the midfield. Benny could play attacking mid, D-mid, box-to-box mid. You know, and as you start going around, the top 10 guys on this team can play multiple positions. And to me, that gives Vermees options, not only when he needs to have somebody come off the bench of plugging that guy in and moving people around, but even how he sets up for the next match. So Davis might, in this match, play out on the wing, and because of, you know, how Vermees sees the other team's defense. Or he might have him be the attacking mid and Benny be the box-to-box guy and give somebody a rest. It just, to me, the strength of this roster right now is there's so many options and so many different ways you could put that team together, and so many guys who are veterans now, and you're not going to lose much by moving them from one spot to the next. Is that a fair way to look at this, Mike?
I think so a little bit. I mean, yeah. I think to a point it is.
How about you, Steve?
Well, the one thing about Vermees, though, is he likes consistency. His whole thing is he doesn't so much – when you talk to him, you ask him how you plan to adjust for people, and what he always says is we're going to play our game, and we're going to try to make them play our game. So in terms of targeted starts and things like that, I think when he gives people a start, it's to give somebody a rest. He's not so much a tactical maneuver in terms of his lineup to react to what other teams are doing, because he doesn't like to be reactive. He wants – so I think the versatility is good in that if somebody goes down or somebody is not performing in a spot, whatever, he's got guys who can slot in there. But I don't think you're going to see somebody roving all over the pitch in a bunch of different positions from match to match, just because Vermees has never shown that. He's always shown that the year that they started off, what, 7-0, how many matches they go in a row without making a single change in the 11? He'd play the whole season like that if he could, without having to make a change in the 11, because he likes that consistency.
Now, and to counter that a little bit, though, go back and look at that roster, and was there a 12th and 13th player that you would have wanted on the field more than the 11 that was starting? Right now, no matter which 11
was sitting,
but no matter which 11 you put out there, you could make a case for somebody else should be on that field. If we just look at the team as it was last year, you still have Davis and Mapp that's sitting there. You have this new center back. You have multiple people at both outside back spots that no matter who you talk to, one person will think Meyer should start, one will think it should be Abdul Salam or Seth or Dia or DeJong. There's so many options at every spot right now. You know, even Quintilla is, you know, in the mix for people wanting him to start because he scored a PK. there's never been as many guys that legitimately before the season starts and before we're even, you know, seeing them kick the ball in reality yet, but so many guys on paper that have a case to be in the starting lineup. He'd never had the option to play that many guys.
So it may be something where he can give guys space out there, their starts a little better. Maybe give people three on, one off, or three. And it also, I think it's just going to be huge in terms of competition for those starting spots. If you're not performing consistently, then somebody's right there behind you. But I don't know. The only person we've really seen go all over the pitch, and just because he's so versatile, is Jacob Peters. And he'll play any place you want to plug him in out there because he's that kind of guy. He understands he's a role player. He's a plug and play kind of a guy. He prides himself on his versatility. But I don't know. Maybe you'll see the lineup shifting more situationally. Maybe because you said it's new territory and it's going to kind of be the way that Vermes has been up till now, up and versus what he's got now and what he does with it.
Yeah, and again, I just think the big difference is what he has now and how many different options he has. I mean, we went through different outside backs last year, some because, you know, guys were recovering and, you know, Myers coming back off of injury, Seth having his injuries in the year and things like that. But even when they seemed like they were all back, they would still rotate through part of the time because he had the option. That just seems to be that once he has that option, he might start taking it. But we're going to have to see. I just love the fact that he has so many options. All right. Is there anything else we should talk about the roster at this point? We've killed it enough.
Yeah, I think we've pretty well discussed it. You know, the only thing I think is, what do you do with Saad Abdul-Salam? Do you send him to Swope Rangers? Because now you've got three right backs. Do you carry three right backs in the roster, or is he a guy you maybe look at more time with the USL side?
I think with Salam and Dia, I think a main part of it is you kind of have to wait and see how Myers and Sinovic have both handled the off season. I mean, Sinovic, for example, he got time late in the season after coming back, but he was never the same player that he was before his concussion the second half of the season. He just never looked like he had fully recovered from the concussion. And Myers never really, really fully looked like he was at his top speed after his Achilles injury the year before. So, I mean, I think with Salam and Dia, I think you have to hold off at least a little bit on loaning them out to wait and see how Sinovic and Myers have really recovered from their injuries, because neither one of them are really getting any younger. And the worry is how can they reach the level that they were at in 2012, 2013, when the back line of Beisler, Sinovic, Myers, and Colin was arguably the best back line in all of MLS for a 2.5, almost 3 year time period.
Yeah, it's of the three rookies from last year, I think Dia is the one who did the most, really showed what he's got. I don't see him going out on loan unless something crazy happens, because when he got in last year, he didn't play like a rookie. And this is a kid who didn't even go to the combine, who's a huge surprise for a lot of people. And I think he's cemented a spot on the senior squad pretty much no matter what. I could be wrong, but I think he's got a spot on the senior squad cemented going into the season.
Well, and that's part of what goes back to my earlier point about De Jong now being on the market with both Sinovic and Dia. I think you can afford to shop De Jong at this point with how Dia played last year.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment, definitely.
Yeah, I won't argue with that. But talking about Swope Park Rangers and loans, and again, I may have read too much in the comments, but my understanding is that you could see some very short-term, quick loans where, say, Sporting plays on Saturday night, and Myers and Sinovic starts, and you can see a midweek game, which I'm not sure how many there are, but you can see the next game for the Rangers feature Dia and Abdul Salam. Because right, they'll send them. I mean, it's not like it's a long trip. They could be sending these guys there. And
that is a real luxury.
There's only probably going to be. And not just having it close, but having the fact that you own it and you tell them what to do. It's not like they're going to whine too much if you send a guy down and pull him back up and send him down and pull him back up, because you're just getting him playing time. You know, it's, you could have EPB on the bench for a Sporting game and playing in the next Rangers game and back on the bench for the next Sporting game. You know, just as an example, you can see that quite a lot this year because they have that ability. They're not going to build a full 25-man roster for the Rangers. It's going to be 18 guys and a constant rotation of Sporting players going down to either supplement it or get the start.
Yeah, it's the luxury too is you've got guys who are going to be getting the same system, the same training, so they're not going to be going down, say, to Oklahoma City. That's I love Jimmy, but he doesn't train exactly the same way Sporting does. When Kemper went to San Antonio, they weren't training the exact same way Sporting was. The guys at Swope are going to be training the exact same way that Sporting does, the exact same system, and they're going to be going home and sleeping in their own beds every night, no matter where they're playing, whether it's Sporting or the Rangers.
And just to make the case the other direction, you have guys down there who, on a case of a couple injuries or Nemo's called up and Dwyer has a sore hamstring, you have a couple scorers down there that you can bring up and pull on the, put on the bench or maybe play, you know, Grant at outside back. You know, you got a lot of guys who, you know, and the Tommy Meyer that they just signed at center back, you know, he's played for MLS. He's played in MLS. You got a lot of guys down there that, hey, bring them up, put them on the bench, start them. They're going to be playing.
The moves the other way though, aren't quite as clear. The way I understand it is that to play with Sporting, they have to have an MLS contract. And so far, these guys are all signing USL contracts. I mean, I think, and I'd have to go back and look, I think maybe LA was able to get a loan for one or two players for one game last year. But for the most part, they had to sign a player to an MLS contract to be able to use one of their USL kids. I think Seattle did it. Was it Kravine that they did it with last year, the guy who wears like number 99? I think they did it with him last year. They had to sign him to a contract with the MLS squad to be able to use him in MLS games. So I'm not sure how they can do that. And again, I have to go read more about the loan structure, but I don't think it's as free and clear, at least with the players that are signing directly with the Rangers.
LA had three players from USL in one match. They loaned three guys from Los Dos up to the Galaxy. Cause I'd actually had this looking up the other day, and it was Dave Romney, Ariel Lassiter, and Daniel Steers, or however you say his name. But there was three guys that played or was in the match. Two of them played. One was on the bench. And one of them had to sign a contract, if I'm reading this correctly.
Yeah, I think eventually, as USL grows, you may see something like what you have with the NBA and the D-League, is guys can sign short-term contracts, two-week contracts, 10 days, whatever, to come up and do that. I think especially with the exponential growth in USL and the fact that so many MLS clubs, in fact, the model is for all MLS clubs to have a USL owned, to own a USL team. But I think you might actually have to get those short-term contracts worked out in the next CBA. Obviously that'll take some time before the next CBA comes up, but I think it's something they might want to explore down the road. Topic for another time, I'm sure.
Yeah, and again, I could be wrong, and I'm not disputing you, Mike, but I just think that it's been figured out that they can pull these guys up, and maybe they have to sign an MLS contract, but it's a short-term MLS contract. They have to have cap room, and they have to have a roster spot, I believe. So you might be able to loan a guy out and pull one up, or there's some kind of shifty paperwork there. But that's kind of part of the deal.
Exactly. There's just a lot of. I think the loans last year with LA. I think those were the only loans I remember seeing last year. I remember Lassiter's kid being one of them, but I don't remember seeing any real rules regarding that. I remember there being a lot of questions after the fact of, wait, how this happened. sort of thing. And maybe when MLS gets around to publishing the 2016 roster rules, hopefully that's before they did last year, which was, I think, like May or something by the time they did that. But maybe that'll be explained a little bit more in there, and we'll be able to understand a little bit more how loaning Tommy Meyer or loaning Johnny Grant or Dane Kelly to Sporting KC for a game would work.
Yeah, good luck on that, because I think tax lawyers look at the contract rules and sort of shake their heads and cry. They're positively arcane in some ways.
Yeah. Now, I did do some research, and I don't want to quote exactly what I was told here, but what I was reading back to some notes that I got from somebody I was talking to, is that USL policy is that there's no restriction on the number that they can send up. That's the USL policy. The MLS one is that any compensation paid to that player goes against the MLS budget charge for the MLS team. And they didn't go into any detail about having the contracts and stuff like that. So, I mean, I don't know about that part, but it just seemed like it was very much more open than what anybody knew in the past. I could be wrong, and I could be a little...
Could very well be.
I think
the free flow will be... I think that they'll probably provide for a pretty free flow between the clubs, if not now, at least in the future.
Yeah, and to me, it only makes sense to do so, because that enhances the relationship between the MLS team and the USL team. That makes it, that much more likely for an MLS team to have its own USL team instead of just an affiliate where we send three or four players. But
you could write in a provision where if you call up a guy, three times during the year, you've got to give him an MLS contract for the rest of the season. You can't call a guy up and down and up and down and up and down without giving him an MLS deal for the rest of the season. They can work in some deals like that, but they're kind of in the shakedown cruise stage of this with so much growth in USL and so many clubs again getting their own teams.
Oh, absolutely. All right.
No. Don't ever say Los Dos again. Not in my hearing.
Sorry. I was actually just reading while I was reading a web page when I said that. So that's probably why I read it. All right. Probably enough about Swope Park Rangers for the moment. Heineman, in his usual fashion, is tweeting out little tidbits of information, but not enough to really know what's going on. Anybody got any guesses about the center midfielder that he spoke about that, said they were trying to get a loan, but it turned into an acquisition, it looks like. Any guesses?
No, I've got nothing right now, but Mike might have something.
Not this time, no. I got nothing on this. I used most of my research ability to find some of the Namath stuff, so I got nothing with regards to potential loan/permanent signing at this point. Just I always anymore I've learned to take everything Rob says with a grain of salt. The CRH comment is a great example of that.
I think that had people definitely looking, didn't it?
Yes. And sometimes, not tonight, but at some point, you have to ask what's going on with Fluminense. You know, are they ever going to get any loans from Fluminense or loan guys out there because of the deal they've got in place? So there's all kinds of in and out questions still to be asked.
Actually,
Fluminense deal
is gone. Yeah.
What?
I think it's over.
I thought it was a 2-year and still had a year left.
Actually, they do have. They did extend it through 2016. Actually, as I pull it up on my computer, so technically they do still have the relationship this year. At least they did when this article was posted on the team's website back in August of 2014. So obviously things could have changed since then. Similar to how the club's partnership with Atlas slowly just kind of faded into the background of the way the team was doing things. So, yeah, technically I guess it is still going, but
if it's way back on the back burner.
If something doesn't come of it, it's not going to surprise me.
I asked somebody about it towards the end of last year, and the impression, I shouldn't say the impression, what I was told was it was basically done. If it's not officially over, it was, you know, it's being let die because there was no, they just weren't getting anything out of it.
Yeah, they're not going to throw a lot. They're not going to put a lot of energy into things that aren't producing pretty immediate results, I don't think. Or at least results they can measure.
They got Juliao out of it for a year.
Yeah,
you know, they got Igor out of it for a year, and then Fluminense wanted a lot of money for him, and more than he was probably worth. And then they probably going to let him just wither down there instead of having moved him.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's on like his fourth loaned team since he left Kansas City. So yeah, I think they overestimated the interest in him at that point.
Yeah. I mean, he was good and I liked him. And I mean, I think I would have been happy if he was still around, but considering how Dia and Abdul Salam showed up last year, I'm okay with him not having come back.
Yeah, I think he burns a lot of bridges back in Brazil too, I think, with his comments on the state of Brazilian football. And I think he may be sort of on the outs with the system down there as well. So I didn't see this topic coming up. I don't think anybody did, but over the board tonight, right?
Yeah, well, as it wraps down, you know, I always put, you know, and whatever else we can fit in at the end of my paragraph of describing the podcast, and this is pretty much how it just went.
If you'd have said odds on mentioning Igor, Juliao, and Fluminense, I think people would have taken that action. I think it would have gone like 75-1 on the odds of mentioning, or actually probably 750-1 on the odds of mentioning Fluminense, Igor, Juliao. I think I probably would have taken that action on the no. Oh, well.
I think wherever Nagamura goes to coach, Igor will show up there to play.
Yeah, that could be very well be true.
All right.
I think that was the last person we had to mention on the roster, too, was Paulo, wasn't it? No, Mike mentioned Paulo earlier, so we're covered. We mentioned everybody in the roster, a couple of the guys that aren't now. So we're good.
Yeah, very true. All right, I've covered everything. We've covered everything that I had written down and a little bit more, obviously. Is there, Mike, is there anything we should talk about real quick? Technically, I've got like 5 minutes left on the podcast.
I got nothing. Yeah, I got nothing at this time.
No problem. We'll have to get our Where's Will John update started up again as we get these more regular. How about you, Steve? Anything that we haven't discussed that we can discuss in about 3 minutes?
No. My ADD has already rained all over the picnic tonight, so I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm good.
All right. I will add one more thing that I just found interesting is that when they announced that they weren't doing a scrimmage today with FC Tucson, and they put out a new preseason schedule that all of a sudden we were scrimmaging a South Korean team.
Huh. Yes, I did notice that, and I forgot to say something about it at the time. But yes, I did find that interesting today.
Yeah, and I was like, that was completely out of the blue for me. I was like, wait a minute, did I miss that? Was that new? And I was told, no, that's new. That's and I think they're scrimmaging San Jose also a couple days after they play Sporting. But
that'll be fun
Pyongnam
to watch.
FC.
Yeah, the Korean teams, especially Korean and Japanese teams, and especially Korean teams, tend to be very technical. So it's going to be really interesting to see how that kind of matches up against the MLS style.
I'm hoping that one is televised or streamed. It's on the San Jose site. It says it's a closed door game.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe they're trying to be sneaky and not allow anybody back in South Korea to see what they're doing.
Maybe you can get Kaplan to stream it on his phone. Put it on YouTube.
Well, I mean, it's not like we have a bunch of trialists we have to hide at this point. As we discussed to death, our roster is kind of full at this point. So
yeah, it's not like anybody's not like the roster's wide open and they've got all these people flooding and trying to get a spot.
Yeah,
and if they're getting a spot, it's with Rangers.
Yeah, feeling trialist 1, 2, and 3 isn't going to get a run out this year that much.
Yeah, no, trialist 3 is Ranger 1 or 2.
Absolutely. So anyway, that's about it. Any last words, guys?
No, it's been fun. Covered a lot of ground.
All right. Hey, it's been great to have both of you on the call tonight on the podcast. This is Thad Bell from thebluetestament.com, Mike from downthebyline.com, Steve, the MLS beat writer for Sporting Kansas City. Appreciate it, guys, and we will chat again hopefully next week.
Sounds like fun. Thanks, man.
Good night, guys.
From the front porch, there's a party on in here. When it's a football night,
whoa,
when it's a football night,
whoa,
we can gather all the friends all around the zoo. There's not a better thing to do. When it's a football night,
whoa,
when it's a football night,
whoa,
when the final whistle blows, you know we're gonna feel alright. When it's a football night,
whoa,
when it's a football night,
whoa,
we can gather all the friends all around the zoom. That's not a better thing to do. When it's a football night,
whoa,
when it's a football night,
whoa,
when the final whistle blows, we're gonna celebrate tonight. When the final whistle blows, we're gonna celebrate tonight. When the final whistle blows, you know we're gonna.